The headlines: Russia strongly condemns the deadly U.S. airstrikes on Syria, the first such attack under the Biden administration. People in Yemen hold rallies in several major cities to voice their anger at the ongoing Saudi blockade on their country. And protesters in Georgia's capital, Tbilisi, take to the streets to demand the release of opposition leader Nika Melia. Hello and welcome, everybody. The Syrian Foreign Ministry has strongly condemned U.S. airstrikes on the country, slamming the attack as cowardly. The ministry said the attack was in violation of international law and a negative indicator for the policies of the new U.S. administration of President Joe Biden. Russia has also condemned the attack, urging respect for the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the Arab country. The Russian Foreign Ministry said the attack violated international law, and this is unacceptable. China has also reacted to the airstrikes, calling on all parties concerned to respect Syria's sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity. The U.S. has claimed that its airstrikes hit facilities used for targeting American forces in Iraq. Informed sources say one person was killed and several others injured, dismissing an earlier report that said 17 people were killed.
The U.S. has launched airstrikes on a number of facilities in eastern Syria near the Iraqi border. Washington claims the facilities were being used for rocket attacks against American troops in Iraq.
We're confident in the target that we went after. We know what we hit. And we're confident that that target was being used by the same Shia militia that conducted the strikes.
The Pentagon said the attack was carried out at President Joe Biden's direction. It said multiple buildings were destroyed as a result. In recent months, a series of attacks have hit facilities used by the U.S. in Iraq. On February 15th, rockets hit an airbase in Erbil Airport, killing a non-American contractor. A number of U.S. contractors and a service member also sustained injuries. Also on Monday, a volley of rockets landed near the U.S. embassy in Baghdad, but caused no casualties. Washington was quick to blame Iraqi resistance groups for the attacks. However, they condemned the strikes and denied any involvement. In October, the groups reached a conditional ceasefire with American forces present in Iraq. Analysts believe the latest U.S. attack on Syria is a crime and violation of international law.
Now, attacking Syria is another matter indeed, and that is a war crime. It's also a war crime that the U.S. is occupying a large chunk of northeastern Syria, where the petroleum resources of Syria are located. And they're holding on to that in order to make sure that Syria cannot rebuild itself.
Anti-U.S. sentiments have been running high in Iraq since the assassination of top Iranian anti-terror commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and deputy head of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Units Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in January last year. Shortly after the killings, Iraqi lawmakers approved a bill demanding the withdrawal of U.S.-led foreign forces from the country. Now analysts believe the recent attacks on U.S. targets in Iraq could be a false flag operation to keep military presence there.
Over a year ago, the Iraqi parliament decided and basically passed a resolution that the United States troops should leave Iraq. And that's the larger context in which the U.S. forces are supposed to leave there, and clearly Washington does not want to pull them out. They're looking for justification to stay there. A couple of months, we've seen the rise of terrorist activities from ISIS.
The Thursday airstrikes on Syria are the first on a sovereign state in the region under the new U.S. administration. During his election campaign, Biden promised to put an end to the escalatory and warmongering policies of his predecessor. However, it looks like that he is following Donald Trump's footsteps, a move which will undoubtedly increase tensions in the region.
Political commentator George Samueli says the U.S. attack on Syria shows Washington intends to relaunch the war on Damascus that former President Barack Obama had started.
We've already witnessed during the early days of the Biden administration a buildup of U.S. forces in Syria. They've been moving forces out of Iraq into Syria. They've been building a new military base in Syria. And from the statements made by Antony Blinken, the new Secretary of State, before the election, it was clear that the Biden administration intended to relaunch the regime change in regime change war in Syria. They are determined to finish off what Obama failed to accomplish during his term of office. So I think one has to look at it in those terms, because the actual statements made by the United States make very little sense. They've come up with no evidence that these facilities in eastern Syria had any connection whatsoever with the attack on the U.S. Base in Iraq. In fact, I don't really know who was responsible for the attack on the U.S. base. So that's why this attack on Syria was basically for itself. It was about relaunching the war in Syria.
People in Yemen have hit the streets of several cities to voice their anger at the ongoing Saudi blockade on their country. The rallies were held in the capital, Sana'a, the western port city of Hodeida, and the northern city of Sa'ada, among others. The protesters said the Saudi blockade is deepening the humanitarian crisis in Yemen. They called on the international community to act without double standards and hold perpetrators accountable for the violation of their rights. Saudi Arabia imposed an all-out blockade on Yemen after launching a war in March 2015. The blockade has hampered aid imports to Yemen, already dependent on humanitarian assistance to survive. The United Nations has called Yemen the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have activist and political commentator Hossein Al-Bukhaiti, who's joining us from Sana'a. Also from Hasselt, we have journalist and historian Mr. Brecht Yonkers. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Al-Bukhaiti in Sana'a. What do you make of today's massive demonstrations?
This is a clear message to the United States that the Yemeni people, when they went in their millions today to the street in Sana'a, in Hodeida, in Damar, in Ib, and in all provinces under the control of Sana'a government, is a clear message to the United States that Yemenis knows that the United States is behind this war. They are the one behind this blockade. And since Mr. Biden has taken office in the United States as president, Saudi ship has blocked more ship, and they haven't allowed especially fuel ship to enter Yemen. And in this last 1 month, the fuel price has actually doubled. So this show you that all these decisions taken by the administration of Biden actually is just a bunch of lies. They have no effect on the ground, and Saudi still continue their war with the full support from the United States. First, if the United States really is worried about the humanitarian situation in Yemen, why are they blocking food ship and fuel ship from entering Hodeida port? Those ships actually has been searched by the United Nations, has been searched by Saudi and United States coalition, and there are members of the United States teams in Hodeida port. So why they are not allowing Yemeni to receive those ships? Most of Yemeni hospitals, most of the economy of Yemen, what's left of it, depend on fuel. Hospitals are running low now of fuel. We will have many hospitals will close in the coming days, and this directly affect Yemeni civilians. As United Nations have said, 400,000 Yemeni civilians, children, face death in this year if there is no intervention will be taken. And I believe that this intervention that the United States has understood is to block those ships from entering Yemen. And actually what's adding insult to injury is that the UN Security Council yesterday hasn't adopted a resolution calling an end to what they say the attack of Houthis against Marib, and they totally ignore that Sana'a is in a war with Saudi Arabia backed by the United States. But I believe now this latest UN Security Council resolution is so the amount of hypocrisy from countries, especially the five members, especially Russia and China, who going to be a target at one day by the United States. They still are not taking the right side. They still kind of used by the United States to attack Yemeni peoples. And I think this protest today, it shows that Yemenis will continue to target Saudi Arabia. As Muhammad Ali al-Houthi have said, they will not stop attacking Saudi Arabia. Actually, here in Sana'a, they will ignore whatever come from the United States. As long as this war and this blockade still happened on Yemen, Yemen will continue to target Saudi Arabia.
Brecht Jonkers, let's talk about the Saudi blockade on Yemen, which is deepening the humanitarian crisis there. Do you think that mainstream media, mainstream Western media, has done a disservice to the people of Yemen by keeping quiet on how the humanitarian catastrophe is unfolding there? Okay, it seems that we're experiencing some technical difficulties with that connection. Hopefully we'll sort it out soon. I'm going to address that question to our guest in Sana'a, Mr. Al-Bukhaiti. Would you say that Western mainstream media has failed the people of Yemen by keeping quiet on the humanitarian catastrophe there?
This is exactly what they have done, as you said. The only time the Western media or international media has actually was honest a little bit about Yemen is just during the few months of the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. It was not about Yemeni, but because this media, especially the Washington Post, they were so angry with Saudi Arabia. That's why they used the suffering in Yemen to target and to attack Saudi Arabia. But after that, actually, all this media has kept a blind eye to what Saudi do. And we see now, if you check all this media, if there is any a small single attack against Saudi Arabia with one and two drones, we see that news all over the Western media. But when Saudi keep killing and continue this blockade on Yemen, there is not a single news outlet that will actually condemn Saudi, and it will expose Saudi. And another thing actually that adding insult to injury is I read the International Crisis Group 2 days ago, and it was actually the goal of that report. It was all about to end Marib attack or the liberation of Marib by Sana'a forces. And they said in the last paragraph to achieve what they say nationwide ceasefire, they put some steps how to do that. They say first the United States should pressure UN Security Council to clearly make it to the Houthi to stop and end the attack against Marib, or they will face consequences like sanction. I mean, this is a report from an independent organization. They are asking the UN Security Council to have sanction against the Houthi who are fighting and defending Yemen, who are advancing against Marib. Marib is the safe haven of Al-Qaeda, the last safe haven for Al-Qaeda in north of Yemen. The brother of Al-Irada, the governor of Marib, he is in U.S. Treasury terrorist list, and he's leading Saudi-backed forces in Marib. The governor of Al-Jouf, which was kicked out by Houthis from Al-Jouf, he has fled to Marib, and he's as well, Al-Hassan Akbar, he's on the U.S. Treasury terrorist list for supporting Al-Qaeda. Those are leading Saudi fight in Marib. Those are gathering all Al-Qaeda and ISIS from all around Yemen. And they show you why the United Nations are crying out loud about it, UN Security Council, and as well the International Crisis Group has asked to stop this battle. And then in return of that, what will Sana'a will get? They said they will form some kind of contact group with the Saudi, United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, and other country to see what should be done to reach a nationwide ceasefire. So this means this report actually is actually used by the Saudi to stop the liberation of Marib, because Saudi are losing now. They couldn't do it military. That's why they use this media, the UN Security Council, the International Crisis Group, just to have more pressure on Sana'a. But I can assure you that this is not going to happen. The liberation of Marib will continue because Yemeni have the right to fight Al-Qaeda and terrorists anywhere in Yemen. As the United States have the right to go to fight what they say, Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, in Iraq and in other countries,
sure.
Yemeni have the right to clear their country from Al-Qaeda. And Al-Qaeda actually was formed by the United States, and ISIS was formed by Obama, and Mr. Trump have said that clearly.
I'm being told we have Mr. Brecht Jonkers once again from Hasselt. Mr. Jonkers, we're running short of time. Very briefly, if you may, talk to us about the humanitarian catastrophe that's unfolding in Yemen.
Yeah, the humanitarian catastrophe, as the United Nations has already said, is the single largest humanitarian crisis plaguing the world right now, and it has been for some years now. And despite the fact that the conflict in Yemen has become more of a media presence now and is getting more more talked about, let's say, in public circles, even in the West, unfortunately, there is still way too little talk about how this crisis is specifically caused by Saudi Arabia, by the United Arab Emirates, by the United States, and by everyone who is part of this monstrous coalition that has been invading and attacking Yemen since 2015. We still hear too little about how this is a man-made disaster. And we hear, yes, people condemn Saudi airstrikes, you know, like the airstrike on the school bus in Dahyan a few years back, but there is still way too little emphasis being put, especially in Western mainstream media, obviously, about the fact that this is a deliberate act of man-made famine and man-made shortages, in which they are trying to starve an entire country into submission, even if this means the death of potentially millions and millions of people. So this is why it is insanely important, I believe, that the Yemeni people come to the streets, that they assemble with the millions of them, and that they bring this to the media. And that's why we also had the International Day of Action for Yemen a few weeks ago. It is important to really push this to the forefront of international consciousness and basically say, this is going on, this is happening. This is what is called the soft war as well, like the Islamic Republic of Iran knows very well. The soft war, the war against imperialist propaganda that has to be fought also in Yemen, also in Syria, also in Iraq, of course, and all over the world, in which we have to fight against the wrong perception and the silence that is killing people, especially now in Yemen, that is potentially going to end up in killing millions of people and could ruin an entire country for decades or centuries to come. And that is why it is important, I believe, for the Yemenis and for everyone, every freedom-loving person in the world to make a stand and defend Yemen against this terrible tragedy.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. That was journalist and historian Mr. Brecht Jonkers joining us from Hasselt. Also thanks to activist and political commentator Hossein Abdulhadi speaking to us from the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. Hundreds of Georgians have protested in the capital, Tbilisi, calling for the release of opposition leader Nika Melia. Demonstrators said they will keep up rallies until all political prisoners are released and snap polls are called. Melia is the leader of Georgia's main opposition party, the United National Movement. He was arrested on Tuesday in a police raid on his party's headquarters in Tbilisi. Georgia is grappling with a political crisis in parliamentary elections in October. The opposition said the vote was rigged after the ruling party, Georgian Dream, claimed a narrow victory. And that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن
by means of Quran
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be
averse. شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد اینها چیزایی لازم نیست
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones
اما این کافی نیست
But it's not enough
ولا تتفرقوا
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن دوری از قرآن از قرآن
Muslims major problem is losing touch with the Quran Quran Quran
کتاب الله
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, which was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. We start from where we left you last week, and here is Ayah 19 of Surah Ahqaf.
وَلِكُلٍّ دَرَجَاتٌ مِّمَّا عَمِلُوا وَلِيُوَفِّيَهُمْ أَعْمَالَهُمْ وَهُمْ لَا يُظْلَمُونَ
For each person there will be degrees of merits pertaining to what he has done, that God Almighty may recompense them fully for their works, and they will not be wronged. If you remember, last Friday, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah, we said, being dutiful to parents and doing good to them is a sign of expression of gratitude towards Allah for His bounties and results in the acceptance of good deeds in the divine court of the All-Merciful who forgives the faults one has committed. We also said that this respect for parents brings the wrath of God while serving parents, especially the mother, paves the way towards paradise. In view of God's promise in the Noble Quran and the famous hadith of the Prophet, paradise lies at the feet of the mother.
Paradise
The ayah that we recited to you now means to say that on the Day of Judgment, Almighty Allah, after having shown much mercy to all His creatures, will raise the degrees of merit of the virtuous believers, while punishing the disbelievers and unrepentant sinners for their evil deeds. In other words, divine degrees and stations are consistent with a person's deeds, and no one will be the least wronged. This ayah is continuation of the preceding two ayahs that we explained to you last week regarding obedient and disobedient children. It means that those who embrace the true faith, repenting their wrong deeds, and beseech God to shower mercy on them and their parents, will indeed have exalted stations, while those who show disrespect to their parents, spurned their pleas against indulging in sins, and denied the veracity of the resurrection day, will be severely punished. The ayah teaches us that, number one, the fate of every person is in his or her own hands, and whatever one receives on the day of resurrection, whether reward or punishment, is the result of his or her words and deeds during the transient life of the mortal world. And number two, the passage of time does not obliterate our words, deeds, and their consequences, which are all meticulously registered in detail in a document, and on the Day of Judgment will be displayed to form as basis for reward or punishment. Now let us listen to ayah 20 of this surah.
وَيَوْمَ يُعْرَضُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا عَلَى النَّارِ أَذْهَبْتُمْ طَيِّبَاتِكُمْ فِي حَيَاتِكُمُ الدُّنْيَا وَاسْتَمْتَعْتُمْ بِهَا فَالْيَوْمَ تُجْزَوْنَ عَذَابَ الْهُونِ بِمَا كُنْتُمْ تَسْتَكْبِرُونَ فِي الْأَرْضِ بِغَيْرِ الْحَقِّ وَبِمَا كُنْتُمْ تَفْسُقُونَ.
The day when those who disbelieve are exposed to the fire, they will be told, "You exhausted your good things in the life of the world and enjoyed them. So today you will be requited with a humiliating punishment for your acting arrogantly in the earth unduly, and because you used to transgress." Physical and mental torments are in store for disbelievers and unrepentant sinners on the Day of Resurrection, beginning with reproach, humiliation, and deep regret. Concerning the manner of dying, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, says in Nahjul Balagha, "In the last moments, a person thinks about what he has done during lifetime." This ayah refers to the manner of torments on the resurrection day, when disbelievers are exposed to hellfire. It will be said to them that the bounties that had been granted in mundane life, like health, property, wealth, comfort, and delicious food, as well as the mind, the intellect, the power of speech, and other capabilities such as courage, generosity, etc., were spent inappropriately, rather than employing them for the attainment of faith, felicity, virtue, perfection, and refrainment from sins. In other words, you spent them on pursuit of vain desires and pleasures of the flesh in violation of divine commandments, and today you face humiliating torments as a result of your misdeeds, since recompense is consistent with one's own actions. From this ayah we learn that, number one, God, the All-Merciful, has blessed the entire creation, whether believers or disbelievers, with His bounties in the transient life of the mortal world, in order to enable mankind to arouse the sense of gratitude and discern between faith and disbelief. Number two, since and all negative characteristics, including greed, arrogance, oppression, and the like, makes a person exit from the path of truth. And number three, those who were arrogant during life will be subjected to severe humiliation on the day of resurrection. Now let us listen to ayahs 21, 22, and 23 of Surah Ahqaf.
واذكر أخا عاد إذ أنذر قومه بالأحقاف وقد خلت النذر من بين يديه ومن خلفه ألا تعبدوا إلا الله إني أخاف عليكم عذاب يوم عظيم قالوا أجئتنا لتأفكنا عن آلهتنا فأتنا بما تعدنا إن كنت من الصادقين قال إنما العلم عند الله وأبلغكم ما أرسلت به ولكني أراكم قوما تجهلون.
And mention Hud, the brother of Ad, when he warned his people at Ahqaf, and warners have passed away before him, saying, "Do not worship anyone but Allah. Indeed, I fear for you the punishment of a terrible day." They said, "Have you come to turn us away from our gods? Then bring us what you threaten us with. Should you be truthful?" He said, "The knowledge is with Allah alone. I communicate to you what I have been sent with, but I see that you are an ignorant lot." These ayahs refer to the mission of Prophet Hud, who was sent to guide his kinsmen, the nation of Ad, that lived in southwestern part of Arabia. Like all divine messengers, he warned the people of the dire consequences of idol worship and indulgence in sins. But most of them, especially the elite, instead of heeding his words and pondering upon them, scornfully told him that if he is really truthful, he should show some example of divine wrath. In reply, he told them that what they ask him to do is not in his power and solely with the all-merciful God, who has entrusted him with a mission to guide them towards monotheism, good deeds, and the bliss of paradise. But it seems obstinacy and ignorance is preventing them from accepting the manifest truth. At times, polytheism and disbelief prevent people from discerning the truth of monotheism and belief, which are considered deviation by those worshipping idols and the imaginations of their warped minds. They mock the prophets, imams, saints, and scholars, and instead of contemplating on their words of guidance, demand that they bring torment upon them. The misfortune of such disbelievers has its roots in their ignorance and arrogance, which along with obduracy and false pride prevents them from heeding the voice of truth. It is said that because of their disobedience, the all-merciful God decreed famine, and for 3 years not a single drop of rain fell, in order to teach them a lesson. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, the duty of divine messengers is to invite people towards the path of God by giving them tidings of the reward of paradise for the virtuous, and at the same time warning them of the dire consequences of polytheism, atheism, and other forms of disbelief so that they may wake up from their sinful life. Number two, it is belief in the hereafter that makes the conscientious persons reform their behavior. And number three, blind imitation of the illogical and harmful customs of the past on the assumption of preserving one's culture is among the signs of ignorant people.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
According to a United Nations World Food Programme WF report, COVID-19 might have left up to 265 million people with acute food shortages in 2020. We have prepared an article for you in this regard, written by Robin Scher, writer. This article is published under the heading Pandemic may have left 265 million people with acute food shortages in 2020. Here's more. According to a United Nations World Food Programme report, COVID-19 might have left up to 265 million people with acute food shortages in 2020. The combined effect of the pandemic as well as the emerging global recession could, without large-scale coordinated action, disrupt the functioning of food systems, which would result in consequences for health and nutrition of a severity and a scale unseen for more than half a century, states another UN report. In the United States, food insecurity has doubled overall and tripled among households with children due to the pandemic, states a June 2020 report by the Institute for Policy Research, IPR, at Northwestern University, which relied on data provided by the U.S. Census Bureau's Household Pulse Survey. In a recent interview with CBS News, IPR Director Dionne Whitmore warned that these statistics would likely continue to hold, with the numbers indicating particularly dramatic rises in food insecurity among Black and Latino families. Indeed, families of color are being disproportionately impacted. According to an analysis of new census data by the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, CBPP, 22% of Black and 21% of Latino respondents reported not having enough to eat, compared to just 9% with white people. Globally, the effects of COVID-19 on food security are equally, if not more, severe. According to a CBS News report, WFP Director David Beasley told the UN Security Council in April 2020 that the world is on the brink of a hunger pandemic. He added, "In a worst-case scenario, we could be looking at famine in about 36 countries. And in fact, in 10 of these countries, we already have more than 1 million people per country who are on the verge of starvation." The number of chronically hungry people increased by an estimated 130 million last year to more than 800 million, about 8 times the total number of COVID-19 cases to date, wrote Mark Lowcock, the Under Secretary General and Emergency Relief Coordinator at the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, and Alex Van Trottenberg, Managing Director of Operations at the World Bank. Countries affected by conflict and climate change are particularly vulnerable to food insecurity. Empty stomachs can stunt whole generations. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, warns that climate change is likely to diminish continued progress on global food security through production disruptions that lead to local availability limitations and price increases, interrupted transport conduits, and diminished food safety. The same might be said about the pandemic, which has made it abundantly clear. Climate resilience, food security, and global health are closely intertwined. In terms of food security, another major concern is the pandemic-related school closures that have occurred across the globe, with UNICEF reporting that more than 1.6 billion children and young people have been affected. Schools provide a food lifeline for children. For so many, that is where they get their only nutritious meal of the day. In January, UNICEF and WFP released a new report that found that more than 39 billion in school meals have been missed worldwide since the pandemic began, with 370 million children worldwide having missed 40% of in-school meals. In early 2020, when COVID-19 was still a looming specter rather than the deadly virus we are more familiar with today, the threat of food insecurity was a practical problem. Scenes of shoppers descending on aisles to stock up on supplies was a common sight. As CNN reported in March 2020, supermarkets around the world rationed food and other products such as toilet paper and cleaning supplies in an effort to curb stockpiling. In Vermont, for instance, a steady increase in food insecurity since the start of the pandemic has correlated to employment levels, according to a survey conducted by the University of Vermont between March and April 2020. Approximately 45% of respondents had either lost their jobs, been furloughed, or had their hours reduced during the pandemic. And a further 2/3 of survey participants who recorded scarcity of food in their households had experienced job losses or work disruptions since the outbreak of the pandemic, according to the survey. Vermont is just one example. The impact has been felt across the U.S. during the week before Thanksgiving last year. The Guardian reported that 5.6 million U.S. households struggled to put enough food on the table. While referring to the analysis of the census data by CVPP, as the pandemic continues to upend lives across the world, it has impacted the entire food supply chain, with factory and supermarket workers being highly susceptible to COVID-19, there has been a commitment decline in food production and a rise in prices. As Scott Faber, Senior Vice President of Government Affairs at Environmental Working Group, EWG, reported, farmers across the U.S. were already facing labor shortages prior to the pandemic. And with tightened immigration as well as the heightened risk and poor compensation associated with these jobs, food processors and farm labor contractors may struggle to find other workers willing to risk their lives to work in meat plants, packing sheds, or produce fields. The pandemic has exposed the weakness of the industrialized global food system, which depends on long, complex transportation chains and cross-border travel. The monstrous and unsustainable food industry known as Big Ag relies on the horrendous treatment of laborers, a wasteful allocation of resources, worldwide environmental devastation, and in a pinch, can quickly devolve into near collapse of the entire system, as evidenced by the delays, shortages, and pressure during the COVID-19 pandemic and the deepening hunger crisis in America. April M. Short, a fellow at the Independent Media Institute, recently wrote in Salon, "Among the many necessary systematic changes, 2020 has illuminated the need to majorly restructure the way we cultivate and access food in our communities. It didn't take the pandemic to reveal the inefficiency and injustice of food system. Globally, a third of all food is wasted, while nearly 690 million people were undernourished in 2019, almost 60 million more people than in 2014. But the pandemic has underscored matter. According to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, the number of acutely food insecure people could increase to 270 million due to COVID-19, representing an 82% increase compared to the number of acutely food insecure people pre-COVID-19. And the disruption of transportation has shown that the long distances it normally takes for food to get from one place to another can be a serious liability during a crisis. Food banks are under tremendous pressure to meet the skyrocketing demand, wrote Claire Bainbow Fonaut, Feeding America CEO, and Zippy Duval, president of the American Farm Bureau, to then Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue in April of last year. At the same time, however, we are seeing literally tons of agricultural goods being discarded because of the shutdown of so much of the economy. Consumer demand has shifted from eating out at restaurants and food services away from home, and food supply chain operations have had to be retooled. And that impact has been felt within the transportation sector. Forbes reported that Andrew Novowick, an agricultural economist at Cornell University, points to a number of weak spots in the food transportation system that could be aggravated by the increased demand for food. A shortage of truck drivers is one potential weak spot, says Novavik. Although he concedes there is debate on this matter, he maintains that trucking companies are finding it much harder to recruit those long-haul drivers. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, an intergovernmental economic group with 37 member countries, said that the pandemic has laid bare pre-existing gaps in social protection systems in a report published in June 2020. While the impacts of COVID-19 are still unfolding, experience so far shows the importance of an open and predictable international trade environment to ensure food can move to where it is needed, the OECD report states. The biggest risk for food security is not with food availability, but with consumers' access to food. Safety nets are essential to avoid an increase in hunger and food insecurity. Another problem is the lack of media coverage about the food insecurity being witnessed around the world, particularly during the COVID-19 era. As The Economist recently pointed out, journalists in 2020 wrote more than 50,000 articles about the cancelled Eurovision contest, but only around 2,000 about drought and hunger in Zambia.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a televised speech delivered on January 8, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, on the anniversary of an uprising led by the people of the city of Qom on January 9, 1978.
The issue of Iran's defensive and missile power. It has been proven that the Islamic Republic's presence helps eliminate the causes of instability, such as the issue of Daesh in Iraq, various matters in Syria, and the like. I do not wish to enter into details, but those who are involved in these matters are aware of this perfectly. Therefore, this regional presence is definite. It should and will exist. As for our defensive power, the Islamic Republic does not have the right to allow the defensive condition of the country to be in a way that incompetent individuals such as Saddam Hussein will be able to come and bombard the city of Tehran, to drop missiles on it, and to fly their MiG-25 fighter planes over the Tehran sky while we are not able to do anything. This happened once.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want or need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
Tehran, the people used to be bombarded either by Iraqi missiles, which had been given to him by the European excellencies, as a result of which his missiles could cover the distance between Baghdad and Tehran, let alone for other cities, or by his MiG-25 fighters at high altitudes. We were not able to do anything, as we did not have enough resources. The Islamic Republic does not have the right to put the country in this situation, and by Allah's favor, we have not put it in this situation. Today, our defensive power is such that our enemies have no choice but to take Iran's capability into consideration. When the missiles of the Islamic Republic are able to strike the transgressing US drone, when they are able to demolish the Ain al-Asad airbase, then the enemy will be forced to take our country's power and capability into account when he wants to make calculations or make military decisions. We should not leave the country defenseless. This is our responsibility. We should not do something to give the enemy the boldness to attack and to render ourselves defenseless in front of him.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.